China Corner is proudly brought to you by the Embassy of the People's Republic of China in Namibia.
Welcome to this evening's session of the China Corner here on Eagle FM. Tonight's show has us delving deep into an in-depth perspective of a recent excursion that I, Dwight, and four other Namibians participated in to the Jiangxi province in China. This particular excursion, spread over 4 days, helped us to understand a deep dive as well as also the very intricate lifestyle as well as also developmental pathway that the province of Jiangxi took in order to alleviate not just rural development and rural poverty, but also provide prosperity to all citizens in the province. Starting off firstly with visits to various particular business entities like the Zhongme Engineering Group Limited, who welcomed the Namibian delegation, which included myself, as there is a direct linkage between the country relations between Namibia and China, as Zhongme has had a rich history in working with Namibian projects and Namibians locally in various developments across the country. This then led to a visit, cultural excursions and visits, for example, to sites like Tang Wung Pavilion, an engagement specifically with seeing the local understanding of how Jiangxi province achieved its particular path to modernization. And this was culminated in an excursion between Namibian media delegates as well as also local media in the city of Nanchang, which is the administrative capital of Jiangxi province. For more, we took a look at the two perspectives that are contained in this evening's program. The first perspective will be dealt with in terms of the discussion between myself and Naita Ishona, who is the executive director of the Namibia Institute of Democracy, who is a civil society as well as also a think tank organization which looks at various particular civil education excursions as well as also the broader discussion around how Namibians understand the machinations of decision making, policy making, as well as also the kinds of decision in terms of participating in elections through every particular 5-year cycle. For more, we get into the discussion with Naita and what the visit to Jiangxi province looked like for her.
Naita, thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners here on this evening's The China Corner. And once again, it's good to touch base again with you after we've had the trip that we've had, the insightful trip to China, plus specifically to Jiangxi province. And once again, good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. Good evening to our listeners.
Naita, if we start off specifically about the very, very, very culture-rich, history-rich, tourism-driven, obviously, but the various particular sort of like overstimulation that we saw primarily in terms of our 5-day excursion in the Jiangxi province in China. I want to get your first impression before we start off like in earnest with our discussion based upon just what you felt, what you saw. And was there something similar in any previous trip, if you've ever been to China before, and what were the two differences between potentially the last time that you were there or this particular time frame?
Dwight, thank you for your question. I've been to China before, and when I was invited last time to China, I was in 4 different provinces. I was amongst others in Beijing, I was in Nanjing, I was in Shanghai, and I was in another place with Nemo, unfortunately forgot. But it wasn't my first time being in China, so I kind of knew what to expect, but there were still stark differences too. Last time I was in China must have been 4 years ago, before Corona. And I could see the stark difference China has developed. People are acting and dressed differently. The amount of development that has taken place, there was a huge difference from last time. What was also different in this trip is that we were focused on one locality.
Mm.
We were focused on the Jiangxi province, which really helped me to understand China better. Because if you have a week and travel through such a huge country like China and you're in four different places, I got to know different, I got different impressions.
Mm.
It took a while to process it. But this time we were in the same province, not far from each other, but it was still, like you said, a lot of stimuli, a lot to see, a lot to take in. But it was really helpful to focus on one locality.
Mm.
And that was a difference for me. And it takes a while. I'm still processing.
Yeah. It's the same thing here with me as well, specifically in terms of when me being a first timer to China and obviously not knowing what I can expect. And primarily, obviously, the internet is never anyone's best guide in terms of what you can expect and what not. That's always just someone else's experiences. But this particular deep dive specifically into Jiangxi province with the history and the culture. Now, this is obviously where we start off in our discussion. When we had to look in terms of the various facets, so moving from Nanchang, the city or the provincial capital, and then moving into the various sort of like tourism attractions, if we use that particular term for now, because that's what mostly they also gave that element of. How did each particular facet feel for you? Specifically, if we start from Nanchang, cosmopolitan, new area of the city versus old area, the Tang Wung Pavilion that we all enjoyed in terms of its antique history, and then moving into the rural landscape of things.
You know, Dwight, what we saw, it's because I work in the civic education field, political education field, I look at everything with from the lens of development, of the sustainable development goals, of national development plans. Because I went into, I was invited to China not as a tourist, but in my role as the director of the Namibia Institute for Democracy, in my role as the leader of a think tank.
Mm.
So I look at everything, of course, with the eyes of the development that took place in China. And the tourist aspect of China for me wasn't much in the foreground.
Mm.
So what I saw, the differences, like I said before, the differences I saw from last time I was in China and this time was quite stark.
Mm.
And that shows me China takes the, I don't know if they're part of this whole sustainable development goals, but their poverty alleviation in the region that we saw, it definitely worked. You can see they have achieved the sustainable development goals. They have brought down hunger in Nanchang and in the Jiangxi province. We could see Nanchang versus the rural areas. And their rural areas are similar to rural areas around the world. But the difference is they worked with their national government for everybody to understand these are the objectives, these are the goals, this is what we want to achieve. We want to ensure across the board affordability of food security.
Mm.
We want to ensure that citizens have sufficient nutrition and are healthy.
Mm.
Citizens move, they do sports and exercises. Citizens are housed affordably and dignified. Citizens, the community has accessible education and good education. You know, all those different aims we set ourselves as humanity to achieve, to give people a dignified life.
Mm.
I could see that. I grew up in communism. I grew up in East Germany.
Mm.
And I know, I experienced communism as a child. But when the wall fell, there was a lot of criticism around communism, that it was a human error for failing, that they didn't achieve to economically empower the country enough to sustain across-the-board wealth. There were a lot of discussion happening in 1989, 1990. And China in those days wasn't much part of the discussion. We spoke about China more as they're supporting us in the liberation struggle. They're supporting African liberation movements. Mm. But China wasn't the economic tiger that it is now in 1989, 1990. Mm. Now, 35 years forward, China is the economic tiger. And that I saw, that I felt. I felt a country that was able to merge their political system, their ancestral system of Buddhism, Confucianism. You know, people say, oh, Chinese are not religious, but they're very respectful of their country's philosophy, which for me tantamount to being religious, being spiritual. So they were able to merge that with their political system and with an economic system that across the board brought more wealth into China, that brought more. The Maslow pyramids of needs is covered in the regions that are, in the region that I saw. Mm. And I'm like, wow, this is something that we can all learn from. And this is something that the world can learn from, because we keep talking about democracy in Namibia, but we have the liberties, we have the freedom, but economically we are in a chokehold of old systems. Mm. We have a high inequality rates. We don't have enough equity across the board. And this is something I saw in China, and this is something that I think we can learn from. Mm. In their philosophies of Confucianism and discipline, they have that element of being humble and working hard. Mm. That element is very helpful. Be disciplined. Work hard. Do what you do for yourself and for your community. Mm. Not for yourself in this individualistic manner, look at me, but for yourself, start with yourself, and you're an extension of your community. So I was really impressed by how you marry ancient philosophy, how you marry a political system, how you marry economic opportunities, and ensure your people are living a dignified life. Mm.
And Naita, just on our splitting the urban and the rural particular sites from each other, because cities obviously will have a lot more services availed to them vis-a-vis the rural areas. When we went specifically into the village of Jinganshan, where we experienced, remember the particular sort of like the battlefield and the layout and the mountains and the installations, like the barracks building that was there, all of it had this rich cultural installation in it. This preservation obviously was being done, but it was interwoven into the rural community's particular historic identity. What did you think about such particular exercise? Because in Namibia, we are trying to do something similar. Obviously, there's the weirdness of, you know, private commercial land and sometimes communal land. And sometimes there's no synergies that you see in terms of how we preserve our history that's strewn across Namibia. But it was something so easily done in a Jinganshan template. What did that look like for you?
It's worth emulating. You know, Dwight, people always say you need to understand the roots, your roots. You need to understand where you're coming from. Mm. And the community of Jinganshan, they came like 30 years ago. Their livelihoods were similar to our village setups. Mm. They understood that they need to be disciplined, and they need to understand their development goals, or they need to understand how their municipality and their authorities work. Mm. And by authorities, I mean the provincial government, the local authorities. one issue that is, I find, a myth in our community, we seem to be divorced from our development plans.
Mm.
We seem to be divorced from those plans that we all ought to internalize to understand the role we play within it. They are a community where they have a place where they meet, they have their community library, they have their historical places. And when President Xi Jinping visited them in 2016,
mm.
he said, this is an important historic place. No one can be left behind.
Mm.
And then they went into action and ensured that no one is left behind. They implemented what they promised to do.
Mm.
And this is what I saw. This is a country of 1.4 billion people. Space is limited, but you need to make do with what you have. That's why I said their ancient philosophy of Confucianism and Buddhism and how to work with the land through Feng Shui.
Mm.
They believed in it. They believe in it and they implement it and they work hard. They're working with their local authority. They work together and believe in the work. We really have great plans. We really have great policies. But we ensure that everybody understands them. Because, you know, in China, I was asking our guide about the education system of her children.
Mm.
And she told me her children are learning
ethics and what was the subject? Ethics and law.
Law. I was like, ethics and law, that is so good to learn early. I mean, you always assume everybody knows right from wrong,
mm.
but we can always, always learn more.
Mm.
And learning law is good to understand the setup you're in. And they learn mathematics. It's the education system that she was describing to me raises you as a young person to already have early on a sense of responsibility towards yourself and your community.
Yep.
And that is the difference, because we shouldn't live divorced from each other and from our policies. And even if they might sound abstract, but when we talk about policies, we are talking about the guidelines.
Mm.
To our community development. We're talking about the guidelines that assist us in having a better and fairer society, the guidelines that assist us to economic empowerment.
Mm.
Because right now here in Namibia, we have the Targeted Youth Fund,
mm.
where young people are able to apply for loans. Oh, that's another thing
mm.
that also brought about development. Loans, 0% interest loans.
Mm.
You know, right in Namibia, you buy a home, you buy a car, you get a loan, and the repo rate decides where your repayment is going.
Yeah.
And this is the system that I mean that we inherited. It's a system that is not working in our favor.
Mm.
Yes, it makes it possible to pay salaries, to build banks, to build insurances, to build things, but does it build people?
Mm.
Does it build people? And this is what I'm missing. If people are chokehold by their financial, in a chokehold by their financial institutions, by their authorities, regional, local, municipality, village authorities, you need to give the people a break.
Yep.
And China does that. China gives its businesses and its people 0% interest loan. You already won halfway there.
Mm.
Now it's up to you to ensure that you're able to repay.
Mm.
But if you're on a 0% interest loan, that already gives you so much more space
mm.
to work with.
Mm.
And this is definitely something we can emulate in Namibia. And I'm telling you, the economists in Namibia would say, no, it's not possible. We need to keep the economy. We need to pay that. When you look at where in this unequal society that we are, do we want to continue going with that you have your enclaves of utter wealth, immense wealth, and then you have these huge areas, informal settlements, ghettos? We cannot continue working like this as a country. That's why it is important that you understand the policies, you understand the development plans. We learn from young what are the political structures, what are the economical structures, what is financial literacy, media literacy, conflict management, food security. All those issues that seem to be big buzzwords are actually saying, giving us a dignified life, giving us people in that village were able to take a flight from their village to Shanghai, and it cost them $50. Try to fly in Namibia.
I remember the people that you met on the flight, yeah.
Yes. I was so shocked. In Namibia, when I want to fly from Windhoek to Katima or to Ondangwa or somewhere, I'm already at 9,000.
And that's possible, and that's probably just a one way, right?
No, it is forth and back, but how many Namibians can afford to visit their parents and their families because of affordability of transport? We were sitting in the high-speed train, Dwight. You saw how full the train was. You saw that you had all different kinds of people there.
Yeah.
Blue-collar workers, white-collar workers, villagers. You had everybody and their relatives in their train because it's affordable to commute. It's affordable to go from village to village, from town to town. We had a discussion with our representative, our caretaker there, who told us, how much does an apartment cost in China? 300 RMB? Or how much was it?
It was about, about 300,000 specifically, which is not far from Namibia, which would be almost like 500,000 for Namibia.
Yeah, to buy one. But to rent, it was so much cheaper. It was, I think, about 300 RMB or 3,000 RMB. I'm not sure. What did you say? How much was it?
It's between the two, 3,000 to 300, which is...
But need as it may.
Yeah.
Where in Namibia do you get a 2 or 3 bedroom flat in a town or in a village for that price?
In a good part of that place.
In a good part, exactly. She was saying she lives in the provincial capital. She works for the for Ministry of Foreign, I mean for the Provincial Foreign Affairs Department. And she was able to buy an apartment. She was able to buy herself a car. Her kids are, her health is insured. Her kids are in good schools. And she is not a stressed woman. She is not a stressed out person. For many Namibians, what causes these mental issues is just not knowing how to make it through the month. We're living in a system that is not giving us space to breathe. We need to, Namibia, when our constituent mothers and fathers met, they wanted to create a system where we have solidarity, freedom, and justice, where you have a just and fair society that creates a dignified life, where you have solidarity, where you know Maslow's pyramids of needs to be covered, your basic housing, your food, your schools, your hospitals, your medical, they need to be affordable. But I got a letter from my medical aid. We're going up 4.5%. I got a letter from my insurance. We're going up so many percent. I see the repo rate. It's going here. It's going there. I see petrol. It's going here. It's going there. City of Windhoek. Namibians, why there's so much mental, you know.
Pressures, yeah.
Pressure is because we are in a system that keeps you in a chokehold, and that tells you, oh no, we need to make that money to have an economy that is fair. But how is China the economic tiger, and it has affordability for its citizens? And this is what I saw. And this is where I start asking myself, where can we, with our 3 million people, with our resource-rich country, not have a more equal society? Why do we have these stark differences in income and in why is our Gini coefficient as it is?
I mean, yep, 100%. Because remember, taking you back now to Jinganshan, remember after the visit of President Xi to the village itself, they went from a GDP per capita in the village of a couple of hundred people from 3,000 yuan or RMB to much higher, you know, in the hundreds of thousands just for that, for that couple of hundred people. And that was
in a village.
And that was just by local authorities bringing the services and the development to the rural communities to make sure that they are also connected to the broader economy.
And including the citizen in this development plan.
Exactly.
Making them understand, making them create small businesses, dried fruit. They have awesome dried fruits. They have community gardens. They have tourism. I mean, they didn't start big industrial companies in that village. The village was basically living off tourism, dried fruit, this beautiful sticky rice cakes.
Communal farming.
Communal farming. And their GDP rose from 2016 in the last nearly 10 years to what it is.
It
that was an eye opener for me. I'm like, this is a community that says, let's toe the line, let's work together, let's be disciplined, and let's ensure. And before you know, Dwight, I used to hear a lot of criticism towards the East and towards how they do things. But if I see that across the board, there is more wealth distribution. Then I don't know. Are we living in the better system or not?
Yeah. Or whose system do we actually try to replicate?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I keep hearing, you have liberties, you have freedoms, but where is the economic security? Where is the threshold where you can say medical aid shouldn't cost more than that? We need to cap profits at some points, that there is a more equal distribution. And I'm aware that a lot of our policymakers are visiting China as well. We need to come back and have these serious conversations and implement. We need to meet with private sector and say, how do we ensure wealth creation across the board? We need to meet private sector, government, and civil society and say, what is it that we can learn from our eastern neighbors?
Yeah.
Are we just looking at them building the roads, having Chinatown, doing what they do here, and we let them do and we criticize them or we hail them? Or are we saying, why is it that they can come here? You know, the fact that you leave from a plane from Addis Ababa to Shanghai and the train is packed with Chinese people or Asian people. The same coming back from Shanghai, coming back to Addis Ababa. And I sat next to four different people because I changed seats. And I asked them, so where are you going to? I'm going to Bamako. What is in Bamako? I'm having a packaging company. How? I got money from my government. I'm doing packaging there now. I'm trying now to scale up and go into the region. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I'm sitting next to the other people. What are you doing? I'm in Cote d'Ivoire. What are you doing in Cote d'Ivoire? I have a hotel there and a restaurant. Who are your people? French, Chinese people. Next person, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going to Ghana. What are you going to do there? I'm selling dried fruit. Dried fruit? Yes, it's a big business. He gave me that. Remember that dried fruit that he gave me?
Yeah, the lovely, the thing that almost says like dried peaches, but it's not dried peaches.
No, it's plums. We went and checked.
Yeah.
On the network, it's dried plums.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's a plane full of people. You have
Business people
that look like you and I. They don't look fancier than you and I.
Mm.
They are coming here backed by their government loans to do business in Africa. What are we doing, Dwight?
Mm.
We're talking Africa Free Trade Agreement. Where is the backup to the people? Where is the, you know, when we ask, but we know that young people don't always succeed, or people don't always succeed with business ideas.
Mm.
Remember the answer that we got?
Mm.
You won't always succeed, but it doesn't matter. Fail and we continue helping you. We take you to an incubation center.
Yeah.
We teach you. You get a 0% interest loan. We ensure you get the education. We ensure we take you by your hand and we work with you.
Mm.
I was like, wow.
And it's a whole process specifically because you don't see a scenario of welfare. You see a scenario of let's bring you to a level and then you've got to grow from there. Specifically like Jinganshan. The only thing that they had for them was remember the chopsticks that, that cost 100 yuan, three RMB.
The bundle of
200 chopsticks. That was their only money-making activity. Yeah. And now it's tourism. Tourism with lovely integrated history and some and some lovely layout, well painted, lovely built streets and all that. Just infrastructure specifically
in a village, just to
uplift people. Just infrastructure was installed. And obviously, see, we saw that stark difference. But Naita, I actually want you to also have a look, or for us to have a look specifically at the transport that connected the rural settings. I mean, we went to the lovely fairy tale, village, the living museum, which our Chinese counterparts did not understand what we meant by living museum, but we had to explain because we know in Namibia. When you had to look at those two settings, those two particular villages that we visited, the living museum, and then the other one was obviously the rural development project that was literally sort of like a fairy tale itself. When we see these two scenarios, these are the kinds of goals that we as Namibia want to achieve. And are these, from what we saw, are these the achievable, attainable goals that we can get to, that obviously we were exposed to at the five of us in just...
Dwight, they're absolutely achievable.
Mm.
Let's look at Namibia's demographics.
Mm.
We have 3 million people, mostly youth, young, healthy population, but that needs support.
Mm.
That needs support in terms of financing their ideas, believing in their dreams, in their visions, informing them about the structures, processes, and systems. We are not an aging population like Asia. Asia is doing what they're doing with an aging population. Imagine aging population.
Mm.
Their pyramid is turned upside down. Our pyramid is like how pyramids are built.
Mm.
You have a lot of young people, meaning you have a lot of men and women power. And by power, I mean physical strength, mental strength. You're in your peak in life between 15 and 45, right?
Mm.
And this is the most of the people we have. But if we don't take them by the hand, if we don't educate them, if we don't motivate them, if we don't show them what you achieve through support, systemic support, then we will have what we have now.
Mm.
People going mad because they don't know how to pay the loans. People going mad because they don't know, my child failed grade 10, where to now?
Yeah.
NAMCO is packed.
Yeah.
How are our systems not talking to the people and the people not talking to the systems?
Mm.
That is what I saw in China. They talk to each other. The system talks to the people talk to the system, and you make it work.
Mm.
You invest the money in the people that it's already last time when I was in China, I was told this wisdom that Chinese people invest in people so that they invest for the next 100 years.
Mm.
You know, if you want to, let me just try to get it right. If you want to invest in, I don't know, in the next 10 years or 20 years, you plant a tree.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get this right, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to invest in the next 100 years, you invest in people.
Yeah.
And in Namibia, we need to get it right to invest in our people. It also has to do with a lot of self-love, right, man?
Yeah.
I know these colonial and apartheid system, what they succeeded in, their core was economical extraction, mental breakdown.
Mm.
And I still see us suffering from that. And there will be people who are like, nah, after 35 years, you should have gotten all over it. But after 35 years, how did our economy change?
Mm.
I see us having more informal settlements.
Mm.
I see us having inequality, and we
didn't see any. Remember, we didn't see any in China. Obviously, we didn't go everywhere, but even in the rural area, we didn't see dilapidated housing. We didn't see people in desperation. We actually saw upliftment wherever we went.
Mm. Yes, it's worth it to go back and look at different fields,
mm.
but. We got the example of the town and we got the example of the village.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's, I'm very inspired.
Mm-hmm.
It's, and I'm aware, Dwight, you know, our parents, they fought for political independence
mm-hmm.
and it's up to us now
mm-hmm.
to ensure economic emancipation.
Mm-hmm.
But that goes with knowledge.
Mm.
Knowledge about the systems, and that goes with working together.
Mm.
The banking systems with government, with the people,
mm.
giving people the support, giving people the opportunity, giving people the zero, Namibia, we should really consider introducing 0% interest loans.
Mm.
Because we have too much of this system. It's this high inequality. It cannot persist. It cannot. The country, I mean, how are you living in utter wealth
mm.
knowing around you is a sea of poverty?
Mm.
I don't get it. Aren't we as strong as the weakest link?
Yep.
And there in Nanganshang and in Nanshang, in Jiangxi, I could see you are as strong as your weakest link.
Mm.
Make the weakest link strong and we're stronger together.
Mm.
With 3 million people, can we work on that?
I would say it's possible. Because it is possible. I would say it's possible. Even for the
and it's possible within our lifetime.
Yeah, and even for the size of the country, for the amount of space between us, all these particular things we saw are possible goals that we can achieve.
It's we need to have the will.
Yeah.
The political will, the community will, and really, because, you know, poverty does so much psychological damage to people.
Mm.
We are wondering why we have such high gender-based violence. We're wondering why we have a high suicide rate.
Mm.
Right. People are desperate.
Mm.
People are, You cannot wake up and be slammed with another increase,
mm.
with another petrol increase, with another home loan increase, with another rental increase, with another school debt increase. Everything keeps increasing. Inflation is massive. And you are like, be happy.
Yeah.
No. Happiness is contentness, is ensuring there is wealth across the board. And that's what I saw.
Mm.
I saw Maslow's pyramids of needs being put into action. I saw sustainable development goals being already fulfilled in 2025.
Mm.
We are 5 years, 4 years away from it.
Mm. But that's not, but that's not obviously the particular goal that we try to achieve, because we've got 2030. We've already set our goals. Naita, I just also want to ask you the same question that we were asked back in China by the local journalist, Zoe there. If you had to encapsulate specifically what you saw, in three words, what would they be specifically? And, can those three words specifically also be replicated in a Namibian context?
We need to be serious, man.
True.
Be serious.
Yeah.
It's even two words.
Yeah.
We need to be serious with our livelihoods, with our self-care and love towards ourselves.
Yeah.
We need to be serious with the self-care towards our community. It starts with us.
Mm. Investing in people.
And invest in people, yes. There you have the three.
Mm.
If we want to talk about the next 100 years, let's invest in people.
Mm.
Capacity building, mental. I mean, if kids in China learn law and ethics at an early age, it gets your head in the right place.
Mm.
Of course, it's not just law and ethics. It's a lot of other things as well.
Mm.
But the seriousness to and the love towards ourselves, that needs to grow again.
Mm.
That you know, because, Dwight, I mean, Namibians, we say we are 92% Christian. What is the number one guideline? Love yourself, love your neighbor as you love yourself.
Yeah.
But if you don't love yourself, then you don't have love for your neighbor either.
Mm. And that is explicitly what we saw throughout the 5 days, specifically.
Yeah. Dedication, love, love for ancient, love for country, love for people.
Mm. But on that note, Naita, I'd like to ask you if there's still something that you wanted to add that I might not have asked specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, to thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners. You can still add something in that I might not have asked.
I really wish for more Namibians to have the opportunity to step out of our comfort zone, to step out of our areas, to step out of our localities and our country, and go and see good examples of how community building can be done right.
Mm.
I wish that for our people. And where we can't have that, I would like to thank you, Dwight, for giving the opportunity to share my findings and to share my trip. I mean, we have access to social media.
Mm.
People get so much information. Get the information that's empowering.
Mm.
Get the information that gets you your next best gig, that gets you the next opportunity. Let's not build each other down. Let's build each other up as a community.
100%. On that note, Naita, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners.
Up next, we talk to Angie Skoltz from Future Media News and who the producer of the Business Report with Future Media, specifically about her interactions and experiences in terms of engaging, seeing, as well as also being able to interact with the everyday life and also the particular way of life in the province of Jiangxi. Taking a particular perspective also how a fellow media personality like myself also experienced this particular deep dive in terms of the modernization pathway as well as also the developmental pathway that Jiangxi province had to make.
Welcoming you, dear listeners, also to this particular discussion where we are taking a look here on this Wednesday evening's China Corner. And I'm joined by one of my fellow participants, or fellow Namibians, I should say, because we were the only Namibians on this particular endeavor, with regards to seeing and experiencing what China's particular rural development looked like, as well as also other particular aspects. If you want to think about it like a Lego puzzle, you might. If you want to think about it like a jigsaw puzzle, you could. But we saw various interesting aspects in terms of how the aspect of rural development and affiliated industries took place. Angie, thank you for taking the time, and I'm welcoming you to this evening's session of the China Corner here on Eagle FM. Firstly, have you slept out your jet lag like I have tried to in the past 3 days?
Sure. Thanks, Dwight. I think I'm a bit better now, but yeah, it was very tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Angie, if we start off just from the get-go specifically, I mean, we're taking a look at this particular development story, that the five of us experienced specifically in this trip. And we've had the opportunity of not just looking at, you know, urban life, but we also saw rural life and how the rural life actually has been sort of like improved. Now, before I get into some of the particular talking points, firstly, what did you see in terms of the contrast of urban and rural settings that we were introduced to?
Well, let me quickly start off with, you know, if I could give you three words to choose, you know, reflecting on the rural development. When I think back to the three words used to describe rural tourism and development in Jiangxi, the tour reinforced them strongly through history, culture, and commercial achievement. I think you would agree. Looking at the history, every stop underscored how Jiangxi roots its development in the legacy of its people and land.
No, you can say it. Primarily, which particular point stood out in that specific scenario that you're trying to explain?
Okay, so rural revitalization isn't happening in a vacuum.
Yeah.
It is tied to stories, traditions, and identity, and it made it easier. So whether in old revolutionary sites or preserved villages, history is treated as a foundation for progress. And I think you would agree with regards to that. And looking at the culture, you know, expression is woven directly into tourism, from traditional crafts to local cuisines and festivals. The culture is presented not as entertainment, but as a living economic sector. You know, the consistency of cultural branding across districts was very notable. And then the commercial achievement, I would say at every point you could see how rural areas are being enabled to participate in the modern economy through digital platforms, agri-processing and ecotourism and, of course, infrastructure. So the results are visible. You know, you could see cleaner villages, micro enterprises, organized cooperatives, and professionalized tourism services. So the tool showed how these three pillars reinforce each other. History attracts visitors, culture creates identity, and commerce sustains livelihoods.
And it was especially, you know, interesting also to see specifically, you know, just also highlighting what we all saw, primarily how the infrastructure of transport sort of like supports all of these particular settings that we went through. Specifically, when you remember that as we landed, obviously the contrast between the cosmopolitan area of Shanghai, which in itself is a larger city than the capital of Jiangxi, that being Nanchang, was the particular differences in what you could see, that each city offered its own particular sort of like urban identity. The second scenario was obviously understanding the specific role with the presentation from the professor that we also experienced, the professor at the communication center, who highlighted, they realized as a province of Jiangxi that technically basically all the other provinces around them were achieving their own rates of prosperity, and Jiangxi was being left behind. And it obviously started showing through the endeavors that what they implemented. Now, I want to ask you one specific critical aspect. In terms of the particular experience of the transport scenario, because obviously we have an impression, you've already cited culture, the tourism identity, the heritage preservation. There's also the facilitating function that the transport infrastructure contributed. And I mean, what we saw were lovely flat roads. The only sort of like going up and coming down was when we had to go into the mountain. But everything else was nice, fast, level, modernized, sort of like streamlined all aspects of transport. What did you particularly also see in that particular scenario, vis-a-vis what we obviously as Namibia are trying to strive for?
From what we observed during, you know, the tour, with regards to infrastructure, transport systems, are highly advanced and well integrated. Mm. So if you look at the intercity connectivity, you know, like, expressways and highways, make travel between cities, fast and convenient.
Sorry, Angie, kiet in die pak, kiet uitgesnij, die jylle eerste gedeelte. Ek weet nie wat
dit is. Moet ek oorbegin?
Asseblief, man.
Okay. All right. So, yes, thank you for the question, Dwight. So from what we observed during, you know, our tour, the infrastructure and transport systems are highly advanced and well integrated. And if we look at urban transport, you know, the modern road networks with smooth traffic flow, the high-speed rail connections linking major cities, and then, of course, efficient urban public transport like your buses, metro lines, you know, just reducing congestion.
Mm.
And then, Dwight, if we look at the intercity connectivity, you know, like expressways and highways make travel between cities, you know, fast and convenient. And then the bridges and tunnels, like, remember we went underwater, and well-maintained rural roads ensure that even remote areas are accessible. And then the rural access, you know, the roads connecting villages to tourist sites, you know, they were well paved and safe.
Mm.
And the infrastructure supports the transport of goods, promoting local commerce and alongside tourism. So, yeah, that's my, so my overall impression, you know, looking at the infrastructure is modern, reliable and high efficient, you know, acting as a key enabler, of both economic development and tourism growth. And the combination of urban intercity and rural connectivity, you know, is a model for how strategic investment in transport can transform, a province.
Yeah. Yeah. And specifically also, just if we look at the aspects in terms of what Namibia is in its own right also trying to achieve, Angie, because in the particular first question that we started off from was the aspect in terms of the, you know, what we saw, which you also highlighted, you know, the culture, the heritage preservation, the identity that has to be merged with all of that, interwoven into all of it. And thus also giving the idea that, listen, you're not visiting a country that looks similar or tries to look like another country, but you're visiting a country that has its own identity. When we come into the similarities in terms of the policies we've got here in Namibia, is that in Namibia, we're also now emphasizing that the tourist industry has to play its particular part. The tourist industry has to include things of culture, a heritage more stronger, not just, you know, like in a salient way, in an educational format at the back, but actually it has to start coming out as some of the main features and attractions across Namibia. If I have to now put you sort of like in an imaginary sense, like if you had to look at the path Namibia now wants to follow, are there certain things that we can extract from our endeavor, our exposure to Jiangxi, with all the stops that we saw, in terms of also emphasizing and also generating the same particular identity? Or is there something that we don't actually have to do in this regard?
Yeah, there's a lot that we have to do. Because, I mean, what we saw was just, out of this world. Mm. And so we can learn a lot from each province, specifically Jiangxi. Mm. So yes, there's a lot we can actually learn from them.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously besides the potential twinning of the Comas region and the Jiangxi province, which obviously has its mm-hmm. own particular goals set in mind, Namibia in its own right obviously has certain particular pathways to go itself. Angie, just on a particular notion in terms of the emphasis on the whole particular package of rural development. And I'm now mm-hmm. taking the contrast away that we started off in the start of urban versus rural. But if we look mm-hmm. at the rural settings, obviously there were 2-hour drives, a 2-hour train, a 1.5-hour train ride, I think, and a plane ride over there. If we look at the interconnectedness specifically of trying to bring people to our rural areas and the rural access that we saw in the province of Jiangxi, how critical is it that rural communities also have to actually enjoy in the various economic activities that we saw, that we actually saw mm-hmm. that those rural communities also enjoyed in Jiangxi?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the interconnection of transport and infrastructure mm. in Jiangxi is one of its standout features, and it's central to the province development story.
Mm.
You know, they're connected to smaller towns and rural areas through high quality highways and rural roads, ensuring good services and people move efficiently and less accidents, of course.
Mm.
You look at, you know, in Namibia, we see a high accident rate. We have a high accident rate. And when we look even like in a small town like Jiangxi, there's almost hardly any accidents.
Yeah.
So this integration of transport modes, you know, the high-speed rail, intercity buses, like I've mentioned, and urban transit systems are coordinated. So it allows travelers, you know, from rural development, urban developments, you know, connecting to move easily from major city to historical or scenic sites.
Mm.
So yes, I think that would make things just much better. Even if you have a high-speed train between Windhoek and Rehoboth,
mm.
and that in itself will, you know, be wonderful for commuters
mm.
and, you know, less accidents on the roads.
Mm.
Care that helps you care for others. That's the basic mental health first aid course, free for NHP members. You learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
And, you know, less accidents on the roads.
Mm-hmm. And there is one particular last point in terms of the village that we encountered in the mountains, obviously, Jinganshan, the one where they used a visit by their president, that being President Xi Jinping, specifically as the focal point for, you know, showing tourists, hey, listen, the national leader visited us, the small village of a couple of hundred people, which actually helped transform them. What do you think? Do we also need to emphasize the particular storytelling that various leaders, community leaders, national leaders, even regional leaders in Namibia have played in each of their communities, thus to bring out that identity discussion even further? Do you think we also need to balance something like that? Because it looked very interesting and it was very compelling.
Yes, no, I must agree with you on that. It does. And there should be a storytelling, because it makes it easier for people to understand, you know, each and every one's situation. So yes, I agree. And I don't know if you remember the thumbs up.
The thumbs up sign, yes, you know, at the particular village. Yeah, that was an awesome one.
Exactly.
Obviously highlighting the particular showing of a positive affirmation by the local community. But what did you think of that, even emphasizing that particular top point?
Yeah, that alone, the thumbs up, is a story on its own. And, you know, storytelling is just, yeah, it takes you to a next level. So, yes, I think if we, you know, incorporate that here, I think, it will just be, tourism even.
Yeah.
Will be next level.
Yep, specifically, yes. Now, Angie, just before I let you go, specifically in terms of our discussion, if I had to ask you the same question that we were asked back in on the mountain of Jinganshan, or there in the vicinity of the village close to Jinganshan, what three words would you use that would come up specifically to sum up this particular experience of a country that obviously is very close to Namibia in its particular development path, but has already put down its own markers, its own examples of what can be done correctly, and but possibly what we can also make use of?
If I had to give you three words, it would be, of course, connected. For the impressive, you know, transport infrastructure, linking cities, rural areas and tourist sites. I would also say cultural, for the rich heritage, history and local traditions preserved and showcased. And then prosperous, for the visible economic growth, rural development and thriving tourism initiatives.
Yep. Angie, on that particular note, if there's still something you want to add that I might not have asked that you just want to leave as a lasting message for the listeners, you can still do so. Or ultimately, you know, thank you for the contribution.
Yes. Now, what I could also just say, if I think about, you know, this whole visit, and specifically on development, my three words to sum up the visit could also be strategic, which is a clear goal setting and planned investment in infrastructure, tourism and commerce. And then also inclusive, you know, looking at benefits reaching both urban and rural communities, and also engaging locals in economic growth, which we experienced firsthand. And then sustainable heritage preservation, you know, the rural tourism and infrastructure designed for long-term impact.
100%. On that note, Angie, thank you once again for taking the time to talk to us here on China Corner.
Thank you, Dwight. Thank you so much. It was wonderful talking to you.
Yep.
And on that note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end for this edition's, or for this particular edition of the China Corner here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. Obviously, this has highlighted some of the particular important talking points in terms of what Namibia can learn, as well as what Namibia can emulate from one of its larger developmental partners. And on that note, stay tuned for the rest of your programming to follow on right after the China Corner. And let's see each other again, same time, same place, at the end of this month.
China Corner was proudly brought to you by the Embassy of the People's Republic of China in Namibia.
Welcome to this evening's session of the China Corner, here on Eagle FM. Welcome to this evening's session of the China Corner, here on Eagle FM. Tonight's show has us delving deep into an in-depth perspective of a recent excursion that I, Dwight, and four other Namibians participated in to the Jiangxi province in China. This particular excursion, spread over 4 days, helped us to understand a deep dive as well as also the very intricate lifestyle as well as also developmental pathway that the province of Jiangxi took in order to alleviate not just rural development and rural poverty, but also provide prosperity to all citizens in the province. Starting off firstly with